everyone. I'm Steve Martin. I'm here again with my friend Clyde. And today we want to talk about regret. Regret has a way of holding our minds captive. It keeps us in a cycle of guilt and shame. I'm sure we've all had those nights lying in bed, our thoughts racing, thinking about what we should have said, wishing we could go back and do things differently. Then we have these feelings of embarrassment, low self-esteem, and regret. They become overwhelming, making it hard to move forward in life. And it affects our relationships and sometimes even our mental health. And religion often deepens that struggle by keeping us locked in the bondage of regret, shame, and guilt, making it difficult to break free from the past. Instead of leading us to freedom, it can leave us feeling beholden to our mistakes. And this is something I personally struggled with. And talking to others, I know it's a common battle, something that many of us deal with. So today we're going to explore these questions with the hope of finding a way to move forward towards freedom from regret. So Clyde, how do we reconcile God's total sovereignty with our responsibility for the mistakes we make?
Yeah, you know, well, this is, listening to you give that introduction, that was awesome. We could be done. Because you really summed it up really well, of course.
Yeah. I mean, that's the solution, though.
Yeah. Well, yes. So, you know, the sovereignty of God, when we really get a hold of this truth, or maybe we should say when this truth really gets a hold of us, it has so many positive spiritual repercussions in our lives. And this area of guilt and shame, regret, is one of those places. And really, guilt and shame and regret are just the other side of the same coin of pride and arrogance. Both of those are caused by us taking responsibility, absolute responsibility, for things that are not ours and for things we have no control over. When we grasp this, we'll find the solution, not only to pride and arrogance, but perhaps more importantly to guilt and shame and regret. And like you said, religion plays a huge role in fostering guilt and shame and regret. Religion's in the shame business. It's in the guilt business. And if we can get, if they can get us guilty and shamed, you know, then their solutions, we will need them to fix us. This podcast is about freedom. And I'm thankful you've been picking these topics and suggesting these discussions of freedom. And this freedom from guilt, shame, and regret is a powerful one. Can you ask your question again?
How do we reconcile God's total sovereignty with our responsibility for the mistakes we make?
Yeah. Well, you know, the mistakes we make, as well as any, you know, the successes that we have, they all belong to God. And so as we grasp the sovereignty of God, we begin to realize that we assume responsibility for things that are not truly ours. And this is what causes us to lay in bed at night and regret, perhaps the events of the day. When we come to understand God's sovereignty and can rest in God and his plan, You know, we can wake up in the morning with the excitement of what the day is going to bring forth, regardless of what we plan and purpose. And at night, we can lay our heads on our pillow, knowing that God's will was perfectly carried out today. And, you know, being able to take these truths that we know about the sovereignty of God and apply them to this area is absolutely crucial.
Can we truly blame ourselves for our mistakes?
No, you know, we can't. And that doesn't mean we become flippant or callous. But, you know, I love, you know, Romans 9, 20 and 21 says, "Oh man, who are you to talk back to God? Will the thing formed say to him that formed it, 'Why have you made me thus?' Has not the potter power over the clay of the same lump to make one vessel of honor and another for dishonor?" You know, Paul repeats this same concept in 1 Corinthians 4:7 when he says, "Who makes us to differ from another?" So as we come to realize that God's in charge of who we are and God's in charge of making us, I'm just going to let, you know, maybe it'd be helpful just to even continue thinking about some key passages. And as we come, you know, as we go along here in our discussion, I'm sure these will come up again. But Romans 11:36, which is a key passage to me, Paul says, "For out of him and through him and to him are all things are coming out of and operating through and back to God." And when we understand this, then we understand that even our mistakes are divinely appointed. It's David that introduced the idea in the Psalms that our lives were pre-written. He says in Psalm 139:16, "My days, all of them, were written in your book, the days they were formed before there were any of them." He also says that the steps of a man are ordered by the Lord. Now, translations like the King James Bible will stick good in there. The steps of a good man, you know, put it in italics, add it. And the fact is that God's writing all our, God's not writing all our stories. God wrote all our stories. And all our days, every one of them, with all their details, were written in his book before any of them began to transpire. And our steps are directed by God. And this includes failure. God has a purpose for sin, which is missing the mark. It is playing a vital role and his purpose of the ages. And so missing the mark and failing and making mistakes, they're all have been written into our story with precision to teach us, to mature us, to take us to the grand place that Father has for us in resurrection, in immortality. And so, you know, we're not to blame for the things that God wrote that we're living. We're on his stage. We have his script. And to realize that, you know, that God is writing this darkness and this fumbling and this stumbling in our lives brings great peace and comfort, so that at the end of the day, again, at the beginning of the day, we can be, you know, I'm excited to see what God wrote. I'll see what the script is today. You know, yesterday's script, it's gone. Now what's today? But then I lay my head on the pillow at night and know, you know, the absolute will of God was done. The perfect will of God was done.
Well, I think for me and a lot of other people, our deepest regrets are often those that have caused harm to other people, you know, and, you know, people get hurt, ends up with divorce or estrangement or you know, people don't talk for years. And so we look at that and say, well, I wish I'd done this, or I wish I wouldn't have done that. I wish I'd been a better dad. I wish I'd been. And so there's these regrets. For me, the deepest and the most, and the shame comes from these where we've hurt other people. So if that is directed by God, as you say, what is, like, where do, you know, first of all, dealing with the regret, but are there things we can do or should do to rebuild those relationships or those kind of things? If it's not our fault, do we apologize?
Yeah. Good question. You know, what we're talking about here is the absolute. And that's where we get our peace, in the absolute. But in the relative, the way we relate to the circumstances and to others, we don't relate in a flippant and callous way to the things that Father has written in our lives. You know, the old saying, the devil made me do it. the devil made me do it. You know, well, we don't really replace that with, well, God made me do it. And even though that's the absolute truth, for the person that we have disappointed and hurt and harmed, the wonderful thing is that we can be empathetic about that. All of us have been hurt. All of us have been betrayed. All of us have had things that were hurtful done to us by other people. Over time, as we learn about the sovereignty of God, we know that God was behind that. It wasn't this person that did it to us. It was God using that person to do that to us. So first of all, I think it might be important to grasp that part of it, for us being the ones who are being hurt. Joseph, a great example of that. His brothers envied him and were jealous of him and hated him. And, you know, they faked his death and sold him into slavery. And years later, when he meets them, you know, he tells them, hey, don't beat yourselves up about this. Yeah, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. So Joseph was able to look past the instrument that his brothers were in this betrayal and this hurt, and was able to know and see and understand that God was the one who did all that. We talked on, a prior podcast, you know, Paul did the same thing. He looks beyond the jail guard or the warden or whoever, and he doesn't see himself as a prisoner of Rome. He sees himself as a prisoner of Jesus Christ. Okay. The thing is, though, that other people don't have this realization. And we are the ones who appear to be, to them, the inflictors of this hurt and this harm. And certainly we can be sympathetic and have empathy toward those that God has used us to be that instrument. It's all important. If we lived in this world, you know, without the influence of other people in our lives, which is the influence God's design. And if it wasn't traumatic at times, then God's growth process, the suffering and the hurting, all which he designs to mature us as sons of God, that he doesn't spare us from those experiences. Not only are they brought to us by other people, but God brings them to other people through us. We're the instrument. We're the receivers and the givers in this. And so we can't expect to deal with people who don't understand the absolute sovereignty of God and just stay in the absolute view and not back in the relative view. Yeah. So, and even with people who do understand the absolute sovereignty of God, you know, we're able to say to them, okay, thought I'd shut that phone off. But anyway, you know, we're able to say to them, you know, I am sorry that this happened. And in a relative sense, we are, you know, we don't want to bring anybody hurt, even though it's the design of God. We were one of Joseph's brothers, even though it worked out for a huge grand purpose. You know, you still don't want to be the one who is, you know, the vessel of that inflicting. So in the relative sense, and being sympathetic and empathetic, you know, we're able to tell people, you know, I'm really sorry that this happened. I'm really sorry that I did this. And, you know, if we see ourselves as actors on the stage and God wrote the script, and if God writes us to some kind of script of hurt or injury, you know, then he also can writes in our lives this opportunity to see if we can right a wrong and see if we can comfort and let people know that we love them and in spite of what has transpired. Because, you know, the real answer to hurt and pain and so forth is the love of God and the compassion of God and the grace of God. So while we may even be the vessels of harm, we could also be the vessels of healing. And so this is the wonderful thing. And the wonderful thing is that we get to love and be gracious and seek forgiveness and to seek reconciliation. You know, being conciliatory is a part of what Paul's ministry is all about. And so though we may be the instrument used for the hurt or division, you know, we can also manifest grace and acceptance and love and humility in bringing a balm to the hurt, you know, that we've produced. And that's really the way God is, because ultimately in the absolute sovereignty of God, he's the wounder and the healer. And so as his sons, you know, we can participate. He might make us the wounder to create a wound, but also then to be the healer, you know. It doesn't mean that we'll always be able to heal those that we have hurt. That may not be God's intent. But again, that doesn't have anything to do with us. It has to do with what God's already pre-written. These things to me are, you know, they're important that we understand them, that we understand that Paul says in Ephesians 2, 10, that we are God's workmanship. So God is the one working. God is the one doing this work. whether it be for good or evil, whether it be in a positive or negative. It's all positive. It will be. Romans 8, 28 reassures us of that. You know, for those of us who love God, we are called according to his purpose, and there's an awareness in us that God is working together all for good, just like with Joseph and his brothers. So we don't allow the absolute sovereignty of God to make us callous and flippant. Oh well, that's what God wrote. You know, tough on you.
So while you were talking, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about nationalism and how God uses that to show man that we can't rule ourselves, right?
Yes.
So is there an aspect of God using us as wounders to show us that we're not all that, you know?
Yes. Yes. Oh, certainly. You know, he uses that. He uses wounding for the giver and the receiver, you know, to teach us that this is not about us on either side, whether the recipient or the instigator. It's really about God. And so regardless of whether someone has hurt us or we've hurt someone else, we turn it. It's all designed to drive us back to God. He's given us an experience of evil that we may know and understand ultimately him and who he really is. And those of us who already know that, you know, we have great enlightenment. You know, we're not in the dark room. Like, oh man, what's going on? I don't know. I don't know what's happening in my life. We can know absolutely what's happening in our lives and know that God has used us in one side of the equation, and now by his grace he could use us in the other side of the equation.
Well, we've talked in the past about Romans 7, but there does seem to be something in us sometimes that we're doing things that for whatever reason, I mean, we know we shouldn't be doing them, but we can't stop.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what addiction's all about, you know.
Yeah.
knowing that what we're doing is going to be harmful, but we can't stop doing it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And we're all addicted to something. You know, we love to be hypercritical of people who sin differently than we do. You know, they miss differently. You know, there's some area that, you know, maybe has no real pull and bearing on our lives. And then we're critical of people who struggle there. Yeah, Romans 7 is an awesome place to see and understand that. You know, what Paul wanted to do, he didn't do. And what he didn't want to do, he did that. You know, and so, but he began to realize that in Romans 7, that it wasn't him. You know, it was sin with a capital S that was working in him to do these things. That's just such a great passage. It is no longer I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. And God's the one who put that sin there. You know, God's the author of evil. You know, he's the one who tells us in Isaiah chapter 45, verse 7, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. So there's nothing in God's universe that he didn't bring into play. And when we understand this, we can relax. We can relax when evil's done to us. We can relax when we've responded in a poor way, and realize that it wasn't us that did that, but that it was God's purpose and God's plan, and even our response to that and to others. It's all pre-written.
And I've had conversations with people who try to say that Romans 7 was about Paul's previous life.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, that's what he was dealing with his whole life.
Yes, of course, yeah. Because he speaks, you know, he speaks in the present tense, you know. Who shall deliver me from the body of this death? You know, there's no deliverance from this problem where we are doing what we don't want to do and not doing what we want to do because it's embedded in our mortality. And the only solution isn't some higher spiritual life that we somehow manage to gain. And that's a part of why religion is in the shame business, the guilt business, because it's important that they have this control over people and that they're the solution. And they're going to give you solutions that don't work, you know, and you'll have to keep coming back and working at it. But it's, you know, but it's futile. In fact, religion only adds to the regret and to the shame and to the guilt. This whole coulda, shoulda, woulda, and that I need to be a better person. I need to have this aha experience, this transformation that happens where now sin is no longer really an active part of who we are. There's only one solution to the sin problem. And, you know, Christ showed us, you know, he died for our sins. The solution to sin is death. And we're going to die, death, burial, and resurrection with him, resurrection with him. And so the answer to these things is resurrection. The answer to these things is being delivered from the body of this process of dying. You know, it's so important. You know, Romans 8, in the very next chapter, he explains 8:20, the creature was made subject to vanity. Vanity, sometimes in our day, we think of vanity as pride or arrogance. Vanity, this word here, vanity, means emptiness, vain, purposelessness, endless frustration, not being able to reach the goal, emptiness. We've been subjected to emptiness and purposelessness. We've been subjected to it, not willingly, but by reason of him who has subjected the same in hope or expectation. God's the one who's put us in this cycle that's vain, that's empty, that seemingly has no purpose. Two more chapters later in Romans chapter 11 and verse 32, he says, God has imprisoned all in disobedience so that he might have mercy on all. So we're imprisoned in these actions. You know, Paul didn't get out of this dilemma. He just knew what the answer was. He knew it wasn't him. He knew he was in bondage to it. And one day, you know, thanks to the Lord Jesus Christ, he was going to get immortal. He was would be resurrected to immortality, where these imprisonments would no longer be an issue.
Yeah, I think I had a conversation with Mike Owens a couple of weeks ago, and he says, called it the post-resurrection amazement.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And not only, you know, in our resurrection, not only are we going to be amazed, and that'll especially, I mean, believers will be amazed too, but especially unbelievers, because some of them may be totally clueless, you know, and they say to themselves, there is no God, and they have no they think this is it. Man, they're, you talk about amazing, you know. But even, you know.
But even those people who've done horrible things and think, well, there's no hope for me, you know. Yeah. You know, I've murdered people. I've done all these things. And
right. And then one of the great amazements is going to be about ourselves, you know, because we're going to be freed from this body of corruption. We're going to be freed from this dilemma that has been imposed upon us currently. But it's all good. It's the design of God. God's taken us somewhere. So it's all good. Those who hurt us and those who, to whom we hurt, it's all a part. The good and the bad is all a part of the great design of God, and where he's taken us.
Well, I looked at my questions here, and a lot of them, like, how can I see God's hand in both our failures and successes? I've written them from the standpoint that I'm the one who did it.
Exactly. You know? Right.
And in the relative, you know, it feels like, well, I'm the one to do it. So what does that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes away on the one side, when we have what would be all apparent observations, a great success in our life, you know, it was out of God. It wasn't us. And that's the remedy to pride and arrogance. But when there's a great disaster in our life and we realize it was God who did it. It was God's hand. He wrote it. Absolutely no question. Then it takes away guilt. It takes away shame. It takes away regret. You know, shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know, sometimes I think about, you know, maybe we're in elementary school and in the third grade, we fail a math test. And when we think about it now, oh man, I can ace that thing. I'm going to go back and take it again. But the trouble with that whole idea of going back is that if I go back, I will have erased everything between the third grade and now. And you know what I'd do? I'd make the same mistake again. Because the mistakes and the hurt and the pain and the suffering are all training and molding and maturing us. So, you know, the whole idea of shoulda, coulda, woulda, or the whole idea of wallowing in our mistakes or gloating in our successes is all answered in the absolute sovereignty of God, because our failures are his. They're ordained. Our successes are his. They're ordained. Absolutely. What better peace can we have?
One thing I want to just point out to people, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about our nature. You know, there's the two natures. We have good nature, bad nature. And I just would recommend that people would check out DC Time on YouTube channel. They've been doing a lot of, they've done a couple shows on that. I think that information would help people tremendously as they look at this.
That material is premium. It's really good. A.E. Nock wrote a great book on the expose of the two natures in the believer. And Dean and Chris are doing a fabulous job at presenting these thoughts of who we really are. And here's I think if I'd leave one thing with those who are listening, is that we're on this stage of human history, and we're actors in God's divine drama, and he's written our script. But the script that he's written is not who we are. This is so liberating to know. Just like an actor who gets up on Broadway stage and portrays a character, this is what's happening in our lives. We're actors on the stage. We're living out a script, you know? And the thing is, if you go to a play and watch an actor on the stage, he has a life outside of this stage. And the thing is, we predate the entrance of sin in the world. So these things that we are currently going through and acting our way through has been added, because Paul tells us that he has chosen us in Christ before the disruption of the world. And so all the stuff we're talking about, all this evil and sin and problems, we predate all that. This is just the role we're currently involved in. And just like any other actor, you know, may play an evil role, may play a role of complication and darkness and struggle, and yet when the film is done, cut, then that actor can go back to who he really is. You know, and that's why the process of divine judgment, let's say it this way, the process of divine judgment is setting things right. And one day, God's going to set everything right in all his creation. He's going to fix everything. Setting things right doesn't mean punishing. It doesn't mean you're going to have to pay up. God's the one who's going to pay up, because he's the one who's inflicted this on us. He's the one who put us in prison to sin and vanity. And he's going to be the one who fixes everything. And it's going to be amazing. Excuse me. When God fixes everything, every disappointment, every slight, every inequity, every injustice is going to be corrected. It's going to be fixed, and everything's going to be made right. And when that happens, Paul talks in 1 Corinthians 4:5 about the tribunal of Christ, the judgment seat of Christ. And he says that in that day, then every man will have the praise of God. Or as the concordance says, then applause will be coming to each one from God. The end result of divine judgment will be praise and applause from God to his creatures. Why? Because they acted wonderfully. All of them. And all of us are God's servants. Everything God made serves him to perfection. That's why he's God and sovereign, you know, and they're all made for his pleasure. And so, you know, it's easy sometimes to see Moses and Abraham and Noah and David and Jesus Christ and Peter and Paul and so forth. Easy to see them as the servants of God. These are the servants of God. But who's not a servant of God? Either a vessel for honor or dishonor, you know, for wrath or mercy. We're all, you know, Pharaoh, God said, for this purpose have I raised thee up. You're my servant. So everybody's playing the role God gave them, and they're playing it to perfection. You are, I am, everyone listening. You're doing exactly to perfection what God gave you to do. And when the curtain falls and reopens and all the actors on this are on the stage, God himself is going to applaud his creation for a job well done.
And you know, after a play or Broadway thing, when they applaud, the villains are there along with all the good people.
Side by side.
Side by side.
They got their arms wrapped around each other, right? Yeah.
Oh, that gives me chills thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? They didn't write a word or an action of that script. They read it and did what they were supposed to do.
And then they all went out and had dinner together.
And then they all went out and had dinner together. That's going to be the fun part.
Yep.
You know, oh, it's going to be glorious. That's that. And some people don't know their actors. You know, there's very few of us who really have this realization. And for those who don't and think they've made a disaster and a ruin of life, yes, you want to talk about, you know, post-mortem amazement, post-resurrection amazement. It's going to be glorious. And we look forward to that, you know. And in some ways, they're going to be those who have suffered the most, and especially if they're in the dark, it's going to be so glorious for them. And you want to talk about praising God, you know, the great praising from God is going to be people who are assured that they were absolutely evil and they couldn't do anything about it and they were doomed. And they're going to find out how glorious this is. You know, I'm looking forward to standing back and watching all that unfold.
It'll be amazing. And I think of all, you know, and all the people have suffered from all of that. Just the millions and millions and millions whose lives were like, they had no, you know, it was just, they were at the wrong place at the wrong, well, according to God, they were at the right place, but God's going to make it up to all of them.
Yeah. Oh, yes, no doubt. My son was talking to somebody as I understand the story, it was relating to me, you know, this is a sort of new information to them about, you know, the salvation of all and God's glorious consummation of all things. And she told my son, she said, I am looking forward to the day of watching Adolf Hitler playing with and hugging on and loving on little Jewish children. And does that conjure up something in your mind, you know? And they're all up in his lap and loving on him and he's loving on them. And God's going to fix everything. I thought that was a beautiful image.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing.
Instead of this, it, you know.
It's going to be hugs and kisses.
Hugs and kisses. That's where this is going.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great place to end this. Thanks everybody for watching. And I don't know about you, but this just having this conversation has just given me more hope and a realization of the freedom that we have that we can experience in Christ. So, thank you for watching. Thank you.